Guys, this is Succession. This is HBO. If you don't want to hear me talking about Logan Roy, talking about then don't listen to this. There are bad language words in this show. Hello, and welcome to the Living Plus episode of Slate Money Succession. Oh boy, this is a big one. I am Felix Salmon of Axios. I'm here with Emily Peck of Axios.
Hello.
I'm here with Elizabeth Spires of New York Times and other places.
Hello.
We are here with Slate Money's favorite guest, Ed Lee. It managed to get up early to do this show. Ed, welcome back and remind us who you are.
Well, first of all, it's always very happy to be with you guys all the time, even at the very, very early hours. I am Ed Lee of the New York Times.
And yeah, we are going to live forever. How attractive does that feel to you, Ed?
No, I love it, especially if the Roys are helping me get there. It's all I really want. Live forever under the auspices of the Roy Empire.
With
if my life can be enhanced by character IP, I'm here for it.
This episode is brought to you by Intuit, the technology platform that brings financial confidence with products like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. You might have learned the recorder in school, but probably not how to navigate the financial world. Luckily, Intuit's on a mission to help with the free Intuit for Education program. It provides students with the lessons to learn essential skills, like how to build credit, file taxes, and budget. Check out their free resources at intuit.com/education.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
So, okay, let's just get into this. This whole concept is glorious, and I love the way that they've tried to tie it into the takeover things. But the big picture concept here, which was apparently in the works even before, I don't know, that Logan and Mattson started talking, is it seems to be a cross between Celebration, which is the Disney company-owned town in Florida, and some kind of insane Adam Neumann idea of like real estate as tech platform.
It's basically mashing up, you know, the traditional media sort of empire elements to, oh, tech, right? Let's get that tech multiple, right? You know,
right.
It's like, there's, you know, one of the many, many really funny things, but I think, was it Greg saying, you know, I think it's hard to make houses seem like tech. We've had them for a while, right? So it's just, it was so awesome because it was like, yes, like just on the face of it, that's the main problem. But like, sure, let's just say that, right? You can just make that happen.
You think of tech as a younger person's kind of game. And this is
exactly
housing for people who are dying or not dying. Possibly living
they're being
forever.
Kept alive, being transformed into turtles. It is a glorious idea of doing things like create housing for people who are living forever and or dying as a service. You can see we've just doubled the numbers in Colorado. It's amazing because numbers aren't numbers. You know, they're just numbers. But yeah, so tell me, how much of this, Elizabeth, how much of this do you think is subtweeting Adam Neumann and WeWork and whatever his new thing is, Flow, something like that?
Yeah, oh, I think it's totally Neumann, right? It's but I was thinking last week, you know, when Mattson was talking about sending his girlfriend his bricks of blood, there was a missed opportunity to sort of turn Mattson into more of like a tech dude who's obsessed with life extension and things like that. And so I was sort of gleeful this week whenever those themes kind of made it into the episode. So it feels like the writers were kind of looking around for techie things that they could, you know, crowbar in there for satirical purposes. So Living Plus seems like a nice mashup of those things.
Definitely had like a Peter Thiel feel, right? With the blood transfusion yeah. things that he was into, which then ties to Mattson's whole, to send, you know, half a liter of blood every once in a while until it stopped becoming a joke. And then it was a joke again, right?
So Ed, like so Mattson makes a bit of a misstep in this episode because he is not some kind of Swedish Ubermensch, and he makes an off-color Holocaust joke in the middle of the Investor Day, which he is then rapidly forced to delete. I know what I'm doing, he tells Shiv, even though he clearly doesn't. Who's the most reckless tweeter out there? I think we all know the answer to this one. Is this like an Elon thing?
This is an Elon thing for sure, right? I mean, yeah. this is what's great about this episode is that everyone comes off like failing in some way, right? Everyone screws up, does something super, super crazy, with maybe the exception of Kendall, bizarrely, right? Because he kind of comes off at the end like, oh, actually, it wasn't too bad. The investors kind of like
it.
Kind of worked, right? Like, even he didn't really know what he was doing half the time, but like, maybe. But then, you know, Mattson is going off with this crazy tweet, this Nazi tweet, which he later deletes, which is not very Elon. Like, that's the one thing that, like, you're like, okay, so maybe he's...
No, actually, what it reminded me of, and this is a little bit of a deep cut, but do you remember when Mark Andreessen tweeted something about how colonialism had been actually quite good for India and got an enormous amount of blowback for that and lost a bunch of deals and eventually had to walk it all back and apologize. And that was the point at which he just started souring on Twitter, on social, on like the media, because he blamed the media for like taking his tweet out of context or whatever, even though like they were just retweeting it. And that one was like, it wasn't quite a Holocaust joke. Although, you know who did Holocaust joke during the pandemic was Alex Berenson on one of his anti-COVID tirades. Did a Macht frei joke on Twitter, which went down as well as you thought it would.
What was the first word? Can you break down the tweet for me?
Doderick is the main sort of cartoon dog character owned by Waystar. So Doderick is actually, if you remember, way back in season one when Greg is dressed up as a cartoon character, I think the cartoon character he's dressed up as is Doderick.
Right, yes. And he throws up inside the uniform of Doderick. Doderick sets you free. Okay, now I understand.
My, how far Greg has come. He is now like shouting at underlings and getting them to do his bidding and trying to be a tough executive.
He's actually turning into a full-blown Roy. You know, he's being sarcastic to Roman and Ken, yelling at people.
Yeah, he's getting editors to like, you know, just do it. Just make it happen. Like, don't. Yes.
This whole episode is that. It's the Roys just yelling at people, firing people, management by fear and terror everywhere. It was horrible. They were horrible. They were the CEO bros are just an absolute mess. Didn't you think?
Yeah, Roman's the CEO bros. Insecurity about not being respected. It seems like he's sort of arbitrarily or on the fly firing people. And then he has to walk it back. Right. And he's like, well, I didn't really fire it.
But the point is, it's not clear that he's walking it back, right? And he talks to Kendall above this, and Kendall about, like, firing people. And he's like, and Ken's, his first reaction is like, you fired Shiv's godmother. And then eventually he's like, you're just going around firing people. This is amazing. Like, we are disrupting. And this is the great thing about Succession, right, is that because it's not a morality play, because it's not like a black and white thing, because everybody is terrible. You know, Joy is terrible. Jerry is terrible. Like, you know, there are no sympathetic characters in this show. There is a part of this show which is like, well, the CE bros coming in, firing the dead wood, reinventing Waystar as a younger, more daring, high growth company. Like, conceptually, it could work. And like, the stock market even almost kind of seems to be buying into it. And is it actually bad for Roman to have fired Joy and maybe even Jerry? Like, how much harm could that actually do?
But you could see worst case, there's a lawsuit and Joy comes and says the story of like, I wanted to talk about democratic institutions and ATN and got fired for it. And that's like a bad news story for,
But that's Kendall's great line from earlier, right? When he's like, we're a Roy, our superpower is that we have no shame.
Yes.
But lying about the numbers the way they did and dubbing, like dubbing words, putting words into the dead Logan Roy's mouth for that video, like if that gets out, that's bad. No, that can't be good long-term for the stock price.
That would be not only like, it'd be SEC violations like times 10 for sure, right? Yeah. If that gets out. But even then, like there's that awesome moment for Carl finally. He gets his backbone where he basically tells Kendall, it's like, you know, I've got your dick in my hand. And like, if you talk about it, I will squeal, right? So, you know, what happens when the king dies, right? Like everyone is just really out for themselves, including the kids, right? And no one's really, really in charge when things are starting to break down. And yes, you're right, Emily. Like there are a number of SEC violations happening in this episode, right? Which like any one of them could just tank the business, period, right? What I was struck by is the whole use of the dad is essentially a ghost throughout the entire episode.
Yeah, it's very Hamlet, right?
It's Hamlet, right? It's dad coming back saying, please avenge me, right? And they're all fucking it up, right? They're all fucking it up in some kind of weird way. And, you know, it's very, I feel like that's very Jesse Armstrong. Like he has to stick in some highfalutin element here, which he does it in a really good way, in a really clever way. But I was really just thinking about, you know, scene one Hamlet the entire time it's happening.
With like, yeah, Hugo and Carolina as Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So I know, you know, our listeners are probably like, yeah, whatever, just get back to the show already. This is what Jesse wants. He wants you to think about this stuff, right? And what happens at the end of Hamlet, right? Like if there's any foreshadowing here, it's like, it's not going to be good. It's not going to be good for the kids, period. Well, what about Shiv? What did you guys think about Shiv this episode? I mean, Shiv really owned the last episode, but like she's sort of like the only one here who like is human in this episode, right? She's sort of kind of getting back with Tom.
Tom is human.
Kind of, Tom finally becomes even more human, I guess. Like that pairing.
Shiv does. Right? The Shiv-Tom dynamic is super interesting in this episode and very complex. Shiv puts on like fucking body armor. I need Emily to weigh in on that suit jacket with like the black sort of stripes down the back and around the back and like not on the front. And then like, wait, Elizabeth is fashion insight here.
Yeah, we have to. So I there's an Instagram account called Succession Fashion that I'm now obsessed with because the person who runs it goes and finds like the individual pieces of clothing that they're wearing. And you notice that there's some brand consistency for each character. So Shiv wears just a ton of Ralph Lauren. Like almost anything you see that's kind of a neutral or a navy, it's probably Ralph Lauren.
All her blazers.
Yeah.
This was a lot bolder than anything she's worn
yes.
all season.
I was struck because the previous episodes of this season, Shiv's got her blazer and her turtlenecks on with the necklace over it, always very conservative. Right. And in this episode, it's all like, it's a lot of cleavage, right? And like dipping neck, what do you call it? Neckline. I'm sorry, it's very early in the morning, listener. But you could see a lot more of Shiv in this episode. And it felt like that was very deliberate. And And at first I was thinking like she's getting back with Tom for nostalgic reasons, but then I realized, no, this is a total power play. There's a vacuum. Logan's gone. Tom had attached himself to Logan. Now Tom is this sort of like free range kind of atom floating around, and Shiv has now attached Tom to her, you know? So now they're allied kind of against the brothers.
Yeah, so no? Shiv's a pinstripe suit is Max Mara, apparently.
But yeah, no, so she is like, she is more put together for the Waste investigate yes. than she was for her brother's wedding. Sorry, I was about to say
yes. funeral. And I'm kind of curious. I mean, she has not had time to like have any procedures done, but is this woman still pregnant or what? It's only been like a couple of days, but she's still pregnant.
She's still pregnant. She's spending her 20 minutes a day crying. It's on her calendar.
Right. She holds the glass of champagne, but we never see her drinking the glass of champagne. So
at some point she has to tell Tom that she's pregnant. Like, this is the big, like, weird thing that is still between them that she hasn't told him and he doesn't know.
Right.
There's my favorite scene in this episode was the exchange between Shiv and Tom, where he sort of admits, you know, I've always really cared about money, and maybe that makes me shallow, but this is, you know, he's sort of being honest about it. And you can tell that she starts to sort of criticize him for being shallow. And he says, well, if you love me, then you want to come live with me in the trailer park. And sort of points to her hypocrisy. And it was such a great little exchange. And you see them kind of understand each other in a different way.
Yeah, that was like the most honest moment, right? Between the two of them and just sort of throughout this episode. Which, again, like those two in this episode sort of seem like the only ones that are sort of having any real enlightenment, right? Any sort of like understanding about what, like they're in on the joke a little bit, right? Of what's happening around them, right?
Although it's interesting that if you looked at the reaction of Hugo versus the reaction of Siobhan to Kendall's speech, Siobhan is also ostensibly a communications professional, right? That's what she is right. when, you know, in season one, and she's like working for senators and whatnot. Hugo understands that, like, as far as ATN watching Middle America is concerned, this kind of transparent schmaltz that and dreams of living forever that Kendall is serving up is actually going to play really well. Shiv, with her suits of irony, cannot see it and thinks it's a complete disaster, and you know, tells Mattson on the phone that it's, you know, he's what's the word she used? She has a great line. He's riding the bullshit unicycle. But she's wrong, right? I mean, he is riding the bullshit unicycle, but on some level, it's working. And Hugo recognizes it before anyone.
Well, so
But the Tom thing is so interesting, right? Is that basically Tom? Correct me if I have over extrapolated here, but I think I've got it. Tom is basically saying in that speech that the reason he betrayed Siobhan to Logan was because of the prenup. That they had like a whole prenup thing and everything was compartmentalized and he didn't have her money and he didn't have any money really, and he was just like reliant on her, and he felt insecure, and what he's always wanted is money, and the way that he could get money, because he wasn't going to get it from his marriage, was by, you know, becoming chairman of ATN and making lots of money in corporate America. And the way he would do that is by getting in with Logan. And the way he would do that is by betraying, you know, the kids to him. I was like, oh, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it totally made sense. He chose what was good for him over her, because that's what he prioritizes.
With the clear implication that, like, if Siobhan hadn't sort of lawyered up and prenupped, then he wouldn't have betrayed her.
Yeah, if she had given him more money, if she had made him more secure in his finances.
More of a partnership, exactly.
Yeah, more entwined, then he wouldn't have had to do this, right? Because he can go find a job with another company.
Right. And that was the vibe from the beginning in the early seasons, right? Where the two of them felt like they were allied, right? Like her dad is crazy, the family is crazy, but like we have this thing and let's do this together kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But then I think you're right, Felix. I think that's the deep read, right, on exactly what's happened here. Like the tragedy, right, of that relationship is she did it, right? He did it. Like they did it to each other. It's not like he just decided to betray her, become Nero, you know, in that scenario, right?
Yeah. Like but he tried to marry her for money, but like she didn't let him. So, right. You know, he had to go get it somewhere else.
She tried to trailer park him, basically, with that
prenup. Yeah.
But when they're put to the test, it turns out that Tom can bite harder than Shiv can.
Which makes sense because he wasn't born into money, so he's more desperate.
And he's never even played bitey before.
I mean, what a rube.
What a rube, right, exactly.
Who among us didn't grow up playing bitey with our siblings?
I'm disturbed by them playing bitey in a public setting. Like, if anyone happened to look upon them, wouldn't that be odd? Wouldn't
this be this Page Six Investor story? Day, basically, yeah. Yeah. The whole, right?
It's like... You imagine an analyst at a bank saying, we have some concern. We saw two executives from Waystar biting each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Shiv has an amazing office, though, out in what I guess it looks like Burbank overlooking the hills.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, too. I think there might be some, like, viewers might have some whiplash around the idea. Wait, where are they now? They're in L.A.? Like, they were in New York all this time, and then, like, London at one point.
The location thing is weird. This whole episode, as far as I can make out, takes place in L.A. with the single possible exception of Shiv refueling and Mattson being there in his private jet, which make no sense. Like, where the hell was that meant to be?
In the middle of the country, I thought?
It's like it's just like rich people, like, literally, like, you know, engaging each other in random airports. It's like, oh, it's like seeing you in traffic, right? It's just like, we're all just here.
That was a great power move, by the way, at the beginning of the show when she won't get out of the plane, so he comes out of his plane in his bare feet. That was, like, good on her.
Oh, my God. And they're so, yeah, and Shiv, like, playing hard to get and being coy and, like, giving as good as she gets with Mattson.
Yeah.
And that whole sort of highly sophisticated, you know, 0.01% flirting thing was awesome. I loved every minute of it.
Do they have a chance, these two?
I can imagine there's going to be more of that to come, for sure.
It's very will they, won't they at this point, I think.
Yeah.
Well, will they or won't they, Emily?
They will.
But they have to, right? Come on, right? We need to have this happen, right?
They have to, Ed says. And he's our favorite guest. Yes.
Yeah,
you just can't handle the sexual tension if they just build it up and leave it there.
Would they do that? No, they wouldn't do that. And I feel Tom would approve. He would be okay with it because it's a strategic move. So, you know, he would go with it. Because they're not technically back together, Tom and Shiv, right? By the end of the show, Shiv is telling him, like, let's just do strategy. Let's just be together for strategy, you know?
Can we talk about those lines, though, where Mattson is like, we're buddies. Can we just talk? And Shiv replies, maybe I hate you. And it's just like he is being like the, you know, trying to puff himself up as the man and being like very aggressive. He's like, keep me looped, my girl on the inside, and she's like, fuck you, my boy on the outside.
it's very Roy speak, right? Like he's learning Roy speak. He just doesn't know how to do that yet, or doesn't understand what that is. But he definitely comes across. I think what's accurate about the show in terms of what he represents is that tech bros are not savvy ultimately, right? Their savvy comes from the fact that they have more money than everybody else, right? But in terms of actual, like, you know, dealing with things, negotiating, sort of reading the room, like, they're just not good at that, right? And so largely because they don't have to be, right? If you think about Elon Musk, like, Twitter is a room. He doesn't know how to read it. So every day he's just sort of like pissing over everything, and it's like, what are you talking about? Free speech, right? Come on. So I think Mattson is still, the jury's still out. Like, is he really smart or is he just a rich guy?
Well, he's also, there's a certain kind of tech bro with that level of money who is just a weirdo, because the the money has sort of turned them strange. So Mattson, you know, running down the tarmac barefoot or sending people bricks of his blood, like that all scans properly to me. The only thing that's sort of out of place is that they cast Alexander Skarsgård as Mattson. He's insanely good looking, which I think Shiv acknowledges at some point. But the rest of it feels very tech bro to me.
Wait, I kind of think he's smart. Maybe I'm just charmed by Alexander Skarsgård, but I think he's smart.
He may or may not be smart, but I think he's better at Roy speak than we think. I have this friend who lives in Sweden and helpfully translated for me the Swedish jokes that they were making in front of Greg when they found out that Greg was a cousin.
Wow, you really did the homework, Felix. My God. Okay.
I did the homework.
They said,
have we ended up at an incestuous family reunion? And then they point to Greg, who's obviously very tall, and says, 2 meters of pure nepotism, an inbred Habsburg giant.
Wow. That is awesome. What a great one.
Even the Swedish lines are great lines. Exactly.
In fact, those are probably the best lines, and they're hidden from view for most of us. Wow.
Good job unearthing that.
No, then maybe he is smart. Maybe he is smart, right? Maybe he's sort of the unusual element here. He's tech bro, but kind of not, in a way. Like, in service of the story, in service of the drama.
I mean, he's smart enough to know Living Plus is going to be bad. Like, there's no way this thing is a success. The stock price will go up, but you know what? It's going to come down, I tell you. This is not going to be a successful...
So the weird thing about the stock price, right, is that ultimately the stock price is just being valued by merger ups right now. You know? Like... Mm-hmm. The people who are buying the stock in the expectation that they will then be able, you know, the merger will go through and they'll get a certain amount of cash and a certain amount of Gojo stock. And that's where, you know, and that's where it's trading and how it's trading. And so, yeah, there might be a little bit of a boost after Kendall's speech on the grounds that, hey, like this new combined company is going to have a lovely new revenue line in... you know, basically sitting granny in front of the TV show her and sitting granny in front of the TV and showing her the entertainment from Infinite Jest or whatever the hell like this dystopian vision is. But it's still, you know, just going to be one small segment of the Waystar, half of the combined Waystar Gojo. And that's how it's still being valued. And so Kendall's cunning plan to make Waystar so valuable by announcing Living Plus that Mattson won't be able to afford it anymore.
Yeah, that doesn't track.
That seems highly improbable.
Because as you said, the merger arb's already priced in, like we know this deal is going to happen. This is where we think that's going to happen. That's this kind of play that Kendall's trying to do is the thing you do before any actual negotiations, right? Before any, you know, you need to puff up the stock as much as possible so that they're forced to get even higher premium, right? But that part's already been settled. So that doesn't really track. The other thing too, again, more SEC violations, just to be clear to the listeners, the fact that Mattson is calling Shiv and saying, hey, can you stop this, right? You can't do that, right? You absolutely cannot do that, period. Like, you can't even back channel that kind of stuff. So on his end, that's a screw up too. So there's all kinds of landmines in this episode in terms of everything that just, any one of these things could end up tanking the deal, put it that way. So that's more potential foreshadowing. I don't know how closely the writers or show are really following the rules around how these things happen, but if they are, any one of these elements could tank the deal.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones.
Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
This episode of Slate Money is brought to you by Wondery, which is a podcast company, and it makes a podcast called The Best One Yet, and it is a daily podcast hosted by Nick and Jack, who serve up three of the most interesting business news stories every day and why you need to know them in just 20 minutes. Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that saved Abercrombie, or which real tech acquisition is like Game of Thrones, or the one financial equation that can finally solve climate change? That's the kind of stuff you find on The Best One Yet. So be in the know this year by starting your morning with The Best One Yet every weekday. Follow The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more. Wondery means business.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I have two like industry questions for you, Ed. The first one is like Waystar Royco. Obviously, their headquarters are in downtown Manhattan, in a building played by the Chase Manhattan or 28 Liberty or whatever we're calling it. Their investor day is in LA. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's not unusual, right? Because in fact, I think they're lifting that directly from how Murdoch has done it with News Corp for many years, right? They've often held their investor day at their studio lots in LA because they want to wow, the investors, they want to wow the analysts. It's like, look, we're going to wine and dine you and maybe have some celebrities roaming around for you to ogle.
And it's so, good to do that in LA. Yeah.
Yes. So that's almost where it, yeah.
Question two, when Jerry turns to Roman and says, "You cannot win against the money. The money is going to wash you away." Is that like how it works? Is that just a standard truth of capitalism, or is she overstating things there?
No, I think that's very true because if you want to take a real life analog, the Murdoch kids, right? They each netted $2 billion out of that Disney deal, right? When they sold. So it's like, how do you walk away from billions of dollars? I don't know what the math is in for Waystar, but it's going to be something along those lines where basically all the kids get to just truly be independent. That was the point of ultimately that deal, right? That they could, at least from the kids' point of view, is that they could finally be free of their dad, money solves all kind of a thing, which is what Tom has been basically telling Shiv in this episode. So that the boys, the CEO bros are thinking about, no, we could still run this and own it and do what dad wanted. Like, why? What? What's the point? Are they still trying to prove themselves to their dead dad? Again, Hamlet.
Yeah, of course they are. Right.
Yeah.
Third question. Since I have you, just realized I had another one. If you listen carefully to the background, while Kendall is warming up for his speech, there's a disembodied blonde woman on stage talking about how ATN is going to crush the ratings during the election. She says that in the last election, the total number of viewers for the election was 71.4 million and that half of them were on ATN and they're going to do like better this year, which seems like ATN is a much bigger cultural force than even Fox.
Yeah, right? No one watches.
That's huge.
Yeah, no show, no event has 35 million viewers. Not even, you know, well, I mean, Super Bowl, yes, but not
right.
Not convention.
Not an election.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we find out later, or at least I found out, maybe we knew this before, that Tom's official title is chairman of ATN. And so, like, let's assume that ATN is you know, bigger than Fox, like, which is definitely the sort of impression that we're getting from those numbers. Let's assume that Tom is, as he explains, very motivated by money and making his own money and having the nice watches. How much does the chairman of ATN get paid? Like, how much does Tom actually have his own money at this point?
No, that's actually a very good question. I mean, in theory, right, like, he's supposed to be, like, inhabiting the Roger Ailes position, even though he's certainly not that, right? I mean, that's an eight-figure contract, right? So, you know, he's make, you know, in theory, he's getting $10 million a year in some form, in some fashion, with bonuses, including bonuses. So, yeah, that's, I think, again, I think going back to what Elizabeth was saying earlier about, like, how he, well, you had the prenup, so I had to attach myself to your dad, get that position, get, align myself with him so that I could get that status, right? Right. So in theory,
so, he could be making right. So Logan gave him like a $10 million a year job, basically, yeah. which puts into nice context that whole scene from, you know, a season or two ago where Greg was saying, like, my uncle Ewan will give me $5 million. And Tom just sneers, like, $5 million? If you're the poorest rich man, the tallest dwarf. What is that? You know? And he's like, yeah, $5 million in wealth gets you nothing. You know, $10 million in income, now you're actually beginning to feel rich.
Yeah. You can buy a few watches with that and, you know.
Yeah.
Probably some stock there, too.
Buy some stock. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I thought Jerry was saying something bigger, which was just like the tech industry is going to crush this company, going to crush ATN. Like, there's no stopping
it. Yeah, she was saying that too. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that's what you see in the real world too. Like, a company like Fox is kind of just puttering along until its viewers die. No?
Well, you know, Madsen has that line in the previous episode where he says something like, you know, I don't think this is a good business model. You know, just selling to old people who, you know, he sort of points out the business flaw of Fox/ATN immediately. And then they come back to it in this episode because it's like, well, what, how would you further monetize an aging population like that? And so, you know, the plan now is essentially assisted living with some possibility of life extension therapies.
Keep the consumer alive somehow.
Yes. Well, so you can keep monetizing them.
And these are not the growth exactly right. areas.
Right.
The growth area is not old people. No company is like, we serve old people and we're doing great. Like, that's not what you want.
Yeah, yeah. But Emily, how about I told you it was all going to last forever?
Oh, okay. Well, forget it.
Oh, can we just call out the Steve Jobs, the actual, like, Kendall Roy, rather than like the writers doing a deliberate Steve Jobs thing where he goes, one more thing. How about I told you it was all going to last forever.
And that's the thing is that, like, that's exactly the sort of the established, you know, sort of creaky old media enterprise trying to be tech. And mm-hmm. sort of the biggest, not the biggest, but one of the really great commentaries in this episode is the living plus. The plus is the tech part of it. Let's just put a plus on this and it'll be like streaming or it'll be like, you know. And
yeah, can you explain this? Why does everything, like, what was with the convention that every single streaming platform had to have a plus on it at some point? Yeah, there was like Paramount Plus, CNN Plus.
So Disney actually,
Disney Plus, yeah.
Disney created the plus. They pioneered the plus, right?
Disney created the plus.
Right? And so everyone else.
It could have been Disney asterisk. Right. Just, you know.
Like. It's really what it is. And like, it's not a great, I'm sorry, that's just not a great invention by by any kind of marketing standard. It just doesn't, whatever, right? And you're just thinking, okay, fine, whatever. But then everyone else decides, oh, that's actually smart. Let's put a plus on ours as well. So it's just lack of imagination
for
everyone else.
The I, right? Apple decides they're going to put the I prefix on everything. It's going to be an iPhone and an iMac. And then, like, but then that becomes an Apple branding. And then Disney decides to invent the plus. But apparently the plus is more fungible than the I because everyone else can copy in the plus.
Exactly,
but no one else copies the I.
Well, I think that was an error on Iger's part. It's like they didn't copyright the plus element of the Disney Plus, so that it could have prevented.
Wow, then HBO Max is a real innovator because they went with Max instead of Plus.
Well, now it's just Max. They dropped the HBO from HBO Max, and now it's just Max, which is
they're
like...
They're the originals. They really did it.
A guy's name, just calling it Max. Hey, Max, how are you doing?
They finally got in on their own joke, I guess, which... So I'm going to give you a little thing about, you know, a bit of reality on this. I actually was able to go to the Succession last season premiere here in New York and got to talk to Casey Bloys and whatever. And it was one of those really sort of, you kind of got the sense, you know, HBO does these really fantastic, or traditionally has done these really fantastic parties for their shows. They're legendary within the industry. And this, the last show, last season, it's going to be the last party for Succession from HBO. And it really felt like it, right? You can sort of sense, it was joyous, of course, it's still a party, but you could sense in the room, it's like, yep, this is it. After this, there's nothing else, right? And I actually asked Casey Bloys, I was like, wait a minute. So when Jesse told you this is the last season, like, did you accept it? Didn't you just tell him, no, you need to do more seasons? He's like, no, it was totally his call. And I respected it. But I did say to him, like, you have to be sure. You can't come back and do this again, right? And I said, why did you say that? He's like, well, I just wanted to sort of nudge him to make sure this was really going to be it. And he's like, no, this is it. Nothing else.
Dang. Yeah. Wait, who's Casey Bloys for people who don't know like me?
He is the head of HBO.
Right.
He is, I'm trying to think who he would be in the Roy Empire.
He is the new Richard Plepler.
He is the new Richard Plepler, right. And by my estimation, a really smart, capable executive. He's not like a big personality like Plepler, but you don't necessarily need to be, certainly. He's very much an adult in that sense, you know, not to say that Pritchard wasn't, but.
Talking about entertainment executives, like the head of Waystar Studios, Joy, she seems like extremely bad at the Hollywood schmoozing game for someone who has climbed her way up the greasy pole to the very, very top.
Yeah, the short glimpse we get, right, of who she is.
You really can't really blame Roman for wanting to fire her after she doesn't listen to him, doesn't answer his questions, just tries to berate him for ATN, and he's not having any of it.
Well, she has her own power, right? Like, she's a studio head, so that's like, you know, that's no small thing. I think he just, you know, he's an open nerve ending. He's just like lashed out, right? Gonna fire you. And had it been done in the Logan Roy way, it would not have been done like that. He would just sort of walked away, had the lawyers call it.
Had the lawyers, exactly. Logan didn't fire people to their face. He just got, you know, Roman to give them the heads up that they were
right,
about to get
exactly.
fired.
Right.
That's like Trump. Trump never fired anyone. He told, you know, someone else to fire them or tweeted about it.
You just pretend fired people at NBC. That's
right.
Never in real life.
Never in real life.
Never in real life. Yeah, exactly.
What's that? What's that Roman? Oh, yeah, that's the Roman line. I didn't fire her, okay? I said that she was fired to her. That's all.
Well, that clears it up. But then he fired Jerry.
And then she was still there, sitting next to Carl and Frank. Like, this is the second time he's fired Jerry, and she's totally ignored it.
I didn't catch that. So she just kept going, just whatever.
She just kept on going. She was like, you know, she was watching Kendall from the wings, and like whispering to Frank, saying, like, "Oh my God, this is terrible. Wake me up when it's over."
So explain to me how Carl, by the end, is okay with the lying and the dubbing and the SEC violations and is cheering Kendall on at the end of this episode.
Because he's spineless. Because he's Carl.
Oh, my God. So we just briefly showed a little backbone only to cower away, scramble away back
well,
to...
again, we don't really know... I mean, aside from the doubling revenue dub in, you know...
Yeah, we don't know what numbers they finally.
Yeah, we don't know what they really released, right? Because they're talking all kinds of ways to like make it happen. And you see, I don't know the character's names, but like you see that poor guy, like, yeah, we can sell that. We can make the argument, you know. So like, can make the argument for everything.
Oh
yeah,
that's also a great line from Ken. What does that do to Kaga? Does it make it bigger, Pete? I've never heard.
I've never heard
CAGR like said as a word before. Have you heard that, Ed?
I've heard that.
We say Kager.
You say it?
Yeah, we say Kager.
Kager?
Yeah. I mean, it's like EBITDA, right? Like that's a bizarre word.
Right.
That, you know, we just throw around, especially in the media business.
So yeah, Kager, for those of us who aren't deeply immersed in finance, is compound annual growth rate. So clearly, when Mattson says this doesn't scale as a business, this is what he's referring to, and this is why Kager is a terrible metric for building houses and retirement communities, is because if you have 10 houses and then you double it to have 20 houses, right? You've built 10 houses, and it's taken a certain amount of effort to build those 10 houses. And then let's say you double it again to make 40 houses. You've built 20 more houses, and that's twice as more effort to build 20 houses as it is to build 10 houses. It's not like you can just keep on doubling it. It's not like I doubled it in the last month, so I can double it in the next month, and I can double it in the next month, because it's not like software. It doesn't scale at zero marginal cost. The marginal cost is enormous. And so talking about growth of building houses in it with the frame of Kager is just it's literally batshit.
But that's part of what makes it funny. That's because Ken's sort of bullshitty strategy is always something, you know, insanely obvious. Like he says, when he's sort of coming up with the Living Plus pitch, he says, you know, well, we just need unbelievable growth. And Greg is the voice of reason here. He says, yeah. Oh, so all we need is unbelievable growth?
No problem.
Why didn't you tell me? But Ken realizes it, right? Like he has that line where he's like, it's almost enough to make you lose your faith in capitalism, right? Where like
all you need to do is
invent is say the highest number, to use Logan's term, and then hey, the stock goes up. The reason that I think there are two reasons people don't do that. And one reason people do. The first reason is that many stock market investors have half a brain cell and they'll realize that just because you've set a high number doesn't mean you're going to reach it. And they're not just going to believe you when you come out with a crazy projection. The second reason is that it's a sugar high, right? You can say a high number and people will believe you for a minute. And then when you don't achieve those projections, then your stock tanks. And, you know, what's the point of making a stock go up if it's just going to turn around and go back down? In this case, you know, the point is to prevent Mattson from buying the company. So you can kind of see the tactic there.
True, but like, what we did see
during like the dot-com bubble in like 1999, and even to a certain extent during the IPO boom of 2021, was a whole bunch of companies, you know, the SPAC boom, a whole bunch of companies coming out with insane projections that no one really believed to justify this $10 a share price, and everyone kind of going, okay. And, you know, and the stock went up until it didn't, right? And so that's like something like Rivian, you know? It was $300 a share because it had these incredible projections, and now it's like $10 a share because it didn't achieve them.
Well, Tesla is still riding that sort of, that bubble idea. But the thing I want to point out is that so much about what Kendall and Roman are doing, just it just feels so off in this episode. Like, you throughout the entire series, you're not entirely sure if they actually know what they're doing in terms of business. Like, they've never really been given the chance one way or the other. Finally, they're given the chance. I'm just like, wow, these guys are terrible at business. Like, they just really don't know how to do it. And you're like, it's either that or they're so screwed up by their dad's death that, like, oh, they don't know where their head's at. But I think it's just they're really terrible at it. The idea of trying to inflate the stock by puffing up the numbers. I mean, when you talk to analysts, this is the way public companies work, is that they always undersell their pitch to analysts. That way, when analysts come out with their predictions are actually a little below what it actually could or should be based on what the company's thinking. They're gaming it so that Wall Street expects this number. They actually printed this higher number, and now the stock goes up, right? You always have to lower the expectations with analysts so that they're always going to undersell. They're always going to undersell their estimate. Analysts know that's happening, so they try to game it. And there's, but then the company knows analysts know that they're doing that, so that it becomes like this really weird sort of game theory thing. But just to go out there and say, like, doubling profits, like, that's insane. No one, even if you think that could happen, you don't do that, right? You say everything but
unless all you want is that brief sugar high boost to prevent Mattson from buying the company.
Which, again,
if you're not playing the long game, if you're just playing the short game, then you can kind of see the tactics.
But then they're going to be left with like a pile of due. Like, what are they doing? They're puffing up the value temporarily.
Yeah, an $80 billion pile of due.
So then Mattson goes away, their stock price tanks. They're terrible CEOs. They're going to just drive the company into the ground in that scenario.
Well, like, I think that's what Kendall's was like. I want the price to be so high that he walks away from the deal, right?
Right.
But once
he does, they're going to be wrecked. Like, it's not in the best interest of the shareholder for that to happen.
No, that's exactly
that's
right.
That's a really bad idea.
I mean, I'm just going to come out and say that, like, All CEOs are fiduciaries. They have fiduciary responsibility to their external shareholders. And as fiduciaries, Roman and Kendall are pretty much the worst fiduciaries that have ever existed on the S&P 500.
Yes.
Hi, I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars, because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming. In the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drum roll, please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
This episode is brought to you by Tinder. You matched, chatted, vibe checked. Now it's time to meet IRL. So, what's stopping you? Tinder is making dating safer and easier with their excellent safety features, like Share My Date, the best way to let your friends know your plans, while Moonlight allows you to discreetly call emergency services, and Are You Sure will prompt people to think twice before sending a potentially harmful message. Explore all of the possibilities for yourself. It starts with a swipe. Download Tinder today.
Let's have some favorite lines. Elizabeth, what's your favorite line?
I always love it when Kendall speaks in business psychobabble and really fast. Mine was at the beginning when he's talking about the longevity pitch, and he goes, "Give me the double click on longevity so I can see everything. Infinite brain box." So now I just have infinite brain box circulating in my
infinite
head.
Infinite brain box. Infinite totally. Brain box. Yes. Emily?
First, I want to say, there were not a ton of good. Without Logan on this show, the barbs aren't where they were. Let's just admit it. Let's be open about it. Let's get it out there.
Well, I mean, Roman tells Jerry that she's, quote, using the F word freely. It feels disrespectful.
Right. That's good.
Only Dad gets to use that word with me.
which is up there with Kendall trying to persuade the board not to do the deal because Mattson apparently uses drugs, says Kendall Roy.
Amazing. But I liked Shiv telling Tom, "I'm sure you're keen to get amongst it." And he says, "It?" And she says, "The vaginas of the cheerful women who aren't tall enough to be models."
Oh my God. I was trying to hear what she said and I couldn't make it out. That's such a good line.
I missed that line too. That's actually really good.
That's a good
amongst
line.
Amongst it.
Ed?
There are so many. I mean, I think it's these little moments, right? Like I think this is a Shiv line with Tom. You didn't have a taste of the dark meat before me.
Oh, right. Like, they have a fight to see who is worse to each other.
Right. Which I think, you know, precedes the you want to play bitey. It's like, you could, like they're, this is sort of a new, because that relationship, the their banter is like at a new level now, right? We hadn't seen quite that thing before.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. Tom's like, I think I got my chisel in you.
Yeah.
It's like, he did. Wow. He did get his chisel in her.
He did get his chisel in her.
Good on him.
I can't stop thinking, I really love Jerry's line where she says, you are a weak monarch in a dangerous interregnum. That was like, well done, Jerry. Like, we love that. Honestly, I think my favorite bit of the my favorite line could possibly have been just Shiv saying, don't criticize my jet interior. You're like, yeah. I mean, like, I feel like don't criticize my jet interior is definitely like 0.001% foreplay right there. You know?
He calls it dated. Doesn't he say it's dated in there?
He says that it's dated.
The decorations? Yeah.
But yeah, let's try and predict on the will it or won't it happen on the takeover. I mean, dramatically speaking, it has to not happen, right?
It has to.
We
not
still
happen.
Haven't really seen the election happen, although we've got a little bit of talk between Shiv and Tom about, like, Tom is like, should I host the election night party that Logan was going to host? And so presumably the election night party is going to be a big episode right there.
The election is definitely going to be a huge turning point, plot point, something that they've been hinting at it all along. And I don't know. Is there going to be like a riot or something? Like a January 6th situation? What's going to happen? I don't know. Something political.
Do you think ATN is going to like call the race for Mencken's opponent a bit like Fox did in 2020?
Possibly.
And Mencken's going to get on the phone with Shiv and be like, you need to fix this.
Exactly. Mencken's going to be on the phone to Tom saying, like, take that call back. And Tom's going to be on the phone to Sid saying, take that call back. And yeah, I doubt it. That would be a bit close to reality.
I think if the deal falls through, so does the whole company. Like something, they're left with nothing somehow, right? No, that's too strong. They're not going to be left with nothing because they're not going to.
No.
Rich.
I mean, like,
they're going to be rich
this
forever.
Exactly. Once you've reached this level of rich, you're always rich.
So what? What next?
What next? We will find out on episode 7 of Slate Money Succession. Well, we'll find out on episode 7 of Succession. And then episode 7 of Slate Money Succession will be back in a week on Monday. But first, we will be back with regular Slate Money on Saturday. Thanks for emailing us, slatemoney@slate.com. Many thanks to Patrick Fort for producing and to Ed Lee for waking up early to do this. Thank you, Ed.
Anytime.
And yeah, we'll see you back next week.